Your phone data can be used to build a deportation score.
Agents detained some 1,600 illegal migrants on Tuesday.
Raided this meatpacking plant.
Rounding up workers.
20 to more than 100 people detained.
And that score decides how fast you get pushed into a removal queue. And they don't even need to seize your phone first. They can buy your signals from data brokers and use that to determine your deportability. In the next few minutes, I'll show you the exact tech stack, from brokered data to phone extraction to immigrant OS scoring to elite-style prediction, so you can see deportations as the horrifyingly efficient workflow that they are. I map this end-to-end, and I'll show you where the weak points are, plus how to reduce your statistical legibility. Welcome back, nerds. I'm Addie. I've spent 15 years in cybersecurity, and I break down cyber threats before they blindside you. This week's a bit of a doozy. I read through dozens of seemingly unrelated disclosures to reverse engineer the tech stack of tyranny. Let's get into it. Where your digital exhaust even comes from. I bet you didn't know that you're leaving a trail even when you're doing nothing. Every app on your phone spits out behavioral data like a fire hose, including what you tap, how you move, where you pause, and who you talk to, when you talk to them, and how often you circle back. People get this in theory, but nobody realizes it turns into a timeline. Start with location. Your phone can log where you are down to a roughly 5 to 20 meter bubble. Contrary to popular belief, it's not just for a moment. In fact, services hold on to movement patterns for months and sometimes years. So your random little errands stop looking random really quickly. Give it 7 to 14 days of steady data, and your routine basically introduces itself through things like where you sleep, work out to your Friday night pattern and even that one friend you always visit after a bad day. The boring stuff becomes the map. Then comes the social graph. They don't even need your message content, just the metadata. That includes who you contact most, how frequently, what time of day, who answers immediately, who doesn't, call logs, contact frequency, message metadata, and it goes on and creates an entire relationship diagram made with timestamps. And it goes beyond just your phone. Zoom out to the physical layer now. That's automated license plate readers scanning millions of plates daily, and those scans get held for 30 days, according to Flock. If you choose to believe them, that's your prerogative, but it can go up to multiple years. Add neighborhood cameras, like doorbells that log who shows up, and collect facial recognition now, when and how often, and suddenly you've got a street-level association map. Visitor frequency turns into a known connection real quick. A lot of it gets bought from data brokers. Some get pulled in routine device searches. It's quiet, normalized paperwork that can do so much damage. So once this exhaust exists, who buys it, who shares it, and who plugs it into an enforcement pipeline? How phones became evidence databases. There are two ways this gets pulled in, the commercial feed and the physical extraction. Before anyone seizes a device, there's a quiet ingestion layer. Data brokers, ad tech feeds, and app SDK exhaust that gets packaged and sold like it's bulk grain. Location trails tied to mobile ad IDs, aka maids. Devices seen here between 210 and 240. Movement histories that look anonymous until they get cross-matched with other records and suddenly snap to a single person. That's just their warm-up though. It narrows the field, draws the outline, and gives the system a shortlist. This is the key shift. Consumer leftovers turn into state-ready evidence. Broker data is great for finding patterns at scale. Device extraction is what turns a fuzzy pattern into timestamped, relational dataset. Clean enough to query, cross-reference, and hand off to scoring systems without needing a human to interpret your vibe. Mobile Fortify converts you into rows and columns. And once you're rows and columns, you're compatible with ranking. So when your life becomes a dataset, who decides where you land in that queue and how fast they try to move you through it? Immigration OS and deportation scoring. How data becomes a removal queue. The creepiest part is the ranking. Once your phone dump, travel history, and normal life stuff gets ingested, Immigration OS turns that chaos into a hit list. They build prioritization engines that answer one question. Who can we move through our pipeline the quickest? Here's how that score gets built. It's cold, practical, and brutally administrative. Device extraction outputs. Your structure, who you talk to, how often, which apps anchor your daily rhythm, where you sleep most nights, where your device spends its daylight hours, which numbers show up like clockwork. Travel and border crossing records. So that's every entry, exit, and timestamp just becoming a dot on a map. Patterns matter more than one-offs. Frequent crossings, unusual routing, gaps that don't line up with your stated routine, those become flags for extra work or an easy match, depending on what the system wants that day. Then you have social network stability. This one hits people emotionally because it feels personal. The system loves stable graphs. The same core contacts, consistent cadence, predictable relationships. Instability reads like friction. Lots of new numbers, churny communication, sudden drops, sudden spikes. None of this actually proves intent, but it does measure predictability. Prior enforcement contact. Once your name touches a system, it sticks. One contact becomes a data anchor that links future records faster. Employment consistency and address permanence. You might think these are for your good citizen credit score points, but they're logistical points instead. That means a stable job, stable address, stable timeline equals lower investigative costs and easier for them to deport. The score reflects probability and cost. A higher score means higher efficiency. The machine rewards what it can process. So you're mostly being sorted into a queue where the top means easiest to push forward and the bottom means expensive to untangle. You definitely want to be at the bottom of this list. Now zoom out. Scoring one person is useful, but the real power move is predicting the ripple effects of acting on that score. So that means what happens when the system stops looking at you as a case and starts modeling you as a domino. Elite and predictive modeling, the digital twin of society. Elite is an app built to simulate people, places, infrastructure, movement, influence, and risk propagation at city, regional, and national scale. Picture a living map that updates when the world moves, because it's fed by the same streams that track the world moving. The only difference between Minority Report and Elite is that it's not technically predicting crimes. Instead, it's predicting where enforcement should go to get the most hits with the least wasted time and energy. Elite obsesses over outcomes. It runs questions like, if we detain this person, who will react? Is it family, roommates, employers, contacts, community nodes? What is it? If we patrol this neighborhood, what shifts? Could it be movement routes, gathering spots, communication patterns, or avoidance behavior? Then, if we restrict this visa category, who disappears from the data set? Is it workers, students, or whole industries that suddenly look quiet? This is what most people miss. You might think it's only about the person in front of you, but it's not. It's the extended network around them, like pressure changes and second-order effects. It treats society like a system with levers. And every real-world action becomes fresh training data. Detain someone and see what changes. Deny a visa. Watch what drops off the map. Increase enforcement here and measure displacement there. The model gets sharper because reality keeps providing feedback. So even when the predictions are wrong, they still generate new data, like new signals, lessons, self-reinforcing confidence curves, and the loop stays alive because the loop eats outcomes. Now for the question that actually matters here. When a model predicts an outcome and a score ranks a person, what's the exact moment it turns into a real queue with real consequences? From scores to queues to removal. The scary part is how boring it looks on the screen. It's a clean pipeline. Apps generate exhaust, data brokers sell the signals, phones make the rest extractable, mobile Fortify turns messy human life into tidy tables, Palantir's platforms fuse it with travel records and enforcement history, Immigration OS assigns a priority score, and then the queue does what queues do. It processes the next best candidate. Nobody has to choose you in any dramatic way. The system reaches your number because your record is efficient to move. And that's why removal actually looks like admin friction that keeps stacking. This could be a visa denial that reads like a form letter, or a travel hold that turns your airport day into a slow motion panic, secondary screening that keeps happening, an employment verification snag, maybe it's banking review, account lock, or even platform flag. Each moment feels random when you're inside it. The architecture treats them as connected outputs. So here's the part people miss. Every outcome gets logged. Detention outcome, logged. Compliance outcome, logged. Missed appointment, logged. Address mismatch, logged. Every time the system touches reality, it collects feedback, tightens the loop, and makes the next decision cheaper. This machine runs on confidence and throughput. And here's my explicit warning, because this is a moment we're living in, and I could talk about this part all day. Once a government has a working score, queue, action pipeline, the only thing separating immigration enforcement from anything else is the goodness of their hearts. That scope can change in a week. The same data sources, tooling, and dashboards just pointed at a different target list. Today, it's deportation efficiency, but tomorrow, it can be who gets tagged as a problem gun owner based on associations, purchases, travel patterns, and who they message. It could be protest attendance inferred from location trails and social graphs. It could be social media dissident labeling based on who you follow, who follows you, who you share, and whether your network overlaps with the wrong cluster. It can be benefits eligibility, housing, employment clearance, banking access, platform bans, or even travel permissions. All of that is just policy layered on top of the same plumbing. And the tech is moving towards less human friction and more always-on ingestion, more automated linking across datasets, and more AI that turns messy logs into a neat little narrative that sounds confident enough to act on. The speed is the danger. When action gets cheap, the threshold to act drops. So even if immigration enforcement seems like it doesn't apply to you, the architecture still matters because the architectures don't stay in their lane. So if it can do all that without any one person feeling responsible, why does it start to feel normal? And how do you protect yourself? Normalization and defense. The biggest trick is getting everyone to call it just a procedure. Automation bias does most of the heavy lifting. If a system flags something, people treat it like a truth with a receipt that it doesn't really have. Then responsibility gets smeared across teams, vendors, dashboards, AIs, and workflow steps until nobody feels like the decision maker or at fault for any of this, even when the decision lands on your life. And then culture steps in and does this gross little magic trick, which is legitimacy laundering. Here's a painfully clean example. Kelly Girardi's day job is mission operations lead at Palantir. That's in her public bio, including Virgin Galactic's astronaut page and mainstream profiles. But when she gets interviewed, the spotlight stays on astronaut, space influencer, STEM mom, the shiny stuff. The Palantir angle rarely gets interrogated in any meaningful way, and that's the problem. Because astronaut is a trust badge. It's aspirational and heroic. The company doesn't need to run an ad saying, "We're safe and inspiring." The association with such a popular influencer does it for them. What do you do that actually works without spiraling, doom scrolling, or trying to live in a cabin using a potato as a router? So what can you actually do to fight this tech stack of tyranny without destroying your router and your phone and every piece of technology that you own? You have to reduce your statistical legibility. You're lowering signal quality so automated systems get less confident about who you are, where you are, and what you'll do next. Start with your data exhaust. So trim permissions, kill always on location when you don't need it, move sensitive conversations onto tools built to leak less like Signal or Threema, and if you're close by, try Meshtastic. Then look at your graph density. If you communicate like a perfect metronome to the same people, the same times, over the same channels, you're extremely easy to model. Add some variety. So change your timing, mix your signals, and stop handing over a perfect template of you. Next, broker cleanup. Opt out of major data brokers and people search sites, and set a recurring reminder, because data grows back. Removal is not a one-time cleanse. I personally use DeleteMe, but you can use anything that clears your name on a monthly basis. Then comes platform reduction. Delete high extraction apps you don't genuinely need. Audit permissions like your life depends on it, because it does. If an app doesn't need your microphone, it doesn't get your microphone. If it doesn't need contacts, it doesn't get them. And if you need more reasons to turn off your microphone, learn about the ultrasonic tracking that's used in phones. And finally, controlled noise. Vary browsing different topics. Play a trick your algorithm into thinking you're a white woman. Avoid perfectly consistent location patterns. And don't let every device look like a single pristine identity. Use a VPN sometimes, but not forever. And make sure you know most of the misconceptions about VPNs, which I've made a video about. Content patterns create their own signature. The point is simple. Make accurate scoring expensive. When prediction costs more than it's worth, you drop priority. So if defense is really about becoming computationally uninteresting, what's the one change you can make today that lowers your scorability the fastest? If you enjoyed this video, you'll need to learn all about data poisoning your digital footprint. I'll see you in that video next.